Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 12 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Niall McGowan of the Bat Minute. Welcome back to the show, Niall.
Well, I've only got two words for you, Rob.
Oh, I hope they're thanks for having me back.
that's exactly how I meant it. I felt I was about to say it, and then I was just like, you know, both times the first words out of my mouth have been swear words.
It's a bit awesome. That's okay. No problem. So minute 12 begins with Sam Coleman interrupting Stewart's thoughts and ends with John using his charm. So
I say, too, just so happy to, like, just get any William Sadler, because I just love William Sadler so much, just in general. He was I'm sure you obviously will be talking about him quite a bit, but like one of my favorite film characters in general is Death from Bill and Ted's Journey, and his performance is just like I've used his reaction of "Damn right" more than any other GIF or any other clip on since the creation of the internet. The amount of times I've responded to people by just sending Death going "Damn it, I," is in the millions at this point. And also he's in a really great show too. There's a one hit wonder show that I loved called Wonderfalls, which was from Brian Fuller, who went on to create Hannibal, you know, the Hannibal Lecter TV show, which I also love. And he was the main character's dad. And I remember at the time, but like, it's Death from Bill and Ted. So I just, nothing but plays for Bill Sadler here. So happy too. If you follow him on social media, he's such like a dad. He has a real kind of lame social media presence where he's just like talking about his family and is like, "Oh, I got a movie out next week, guys," and it's like Salem's Lot or something, where he plays like a horrible serial.
Yeah, well, I wrote to, like, oh, go on, I reached out to him, but he didn't respond. So, you know. Maybe he's just too busy with his dad things.
You think, mate, would you rather he said yes, or would you rather he responded with, "I've got two words for you, Rob"?
That would actually be very funny. Dude, that was like, I would be able to say that, yes, Bill Sadler responded to me and said, "Fuck you." Okay, yeah, that's true.
He should have that with his agent. He should just be like, any like unsolicited requests, just send this clip.
For some reason, I don't think that he always is constantly thinking about his role in Die Hard 2. You know, for some reason, I don't know.
I mean, I still think of him doing that naked Tai Chi all the time. So I think he should. What other movies has he got to show off? Is like sinewy.
Well, apparently he worked out for months, you know, beforehand, and didn't even realize that he was supposed to be doing this naked. He thought he was supposed to be doing it just with the shirt off or something like that.
So maybe you think like, oh, you're going to be the main villain in Die Hard. You're like, oh, they'll be wearing like a cool Armani suit the whole time. Like, nope, you get in that gym, buddy, because those buns have got to be tight.
Yeah, then Randy Harland. What can you do?
Yeah. He has like one of my favorite movie moments in the past couple of years too is when because he came back obviously for Bill and Ted 3, which I thought was a great movie as well. But yeah, obviously Bill and Ted have fallen out with Death. But they want to get Wild Stallions back together, and then they go down to visit him in hell, and he has a whole big argument with them, and he like slams the door in their face, and they instantly knock the door again, and he just goes like, "Who is it?" And they just go, "Bill and Ted." And he has to like, "Oh, you guys again." But it's just so well done. I love Bill Sadler so much. He's such a great screen presence. But anyway, dude, it's just such a like, I think he's only like 41 or something here. And it's just like, it has such a weathered look about him. He's just a taut looking man. He looks like he's made out of leather.
Which I guess makes sense, you know, because again, he is a colonel. So he must be in his 40s.
Yeah. It's a weird too, because you always see him playing like, I guess he always plays like, you know, mechanics or, usually dad type of roles. Actually, thinking of him as a villainous colonel in Die Hard 2, it seems to be kind of slightly out of step with a lot of what he usually does.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of him works about when he was in Shawshank, you know, where he played one of the guys, but he wasn't that, he wasn't that bright.
Yeah. That's one of those ones too, because he's just a consistent character actor. So I think he's a big Frank Darabont guy. I think he shows up.
He was in the Green Mile also.
And the Mist, he's in there somewhere too.
I don't think he ever made it onto, you know, The Walking Dead. I don't think he...
It could have been... Darabont might have been saving him. He might have been like, well, if I was to go on making this show, he would be like a big character down the line. But he's like, wait, he only got the one... Although he's worked his way, because considering like Frank Darabont's making all these Stephen King adaptations. Yeah. And Shawshank, he's barely there. Like, he's a real mm-hmm. side character. And then, like, you know, moving to Green Mile, and then, you know... Green Mile is a bit more...
No, not much. He's the father of the two girls that were killed. You know, he doesn't have that much to do.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a little bit more. At least he has a distinct part, whereas in Shawshank, he's just one of the guys. He's just one of them, you know. And then the Mist, he's just one of the people, I guess. But I think he gets killed by like a tentacle monster or something. But now I know he's Kurt Barlow, I think, isn't he, in the new Salem's Lot? Like, he's like the main villain in that. So I'm pretty sure he's playing Kurt Barlow. I think I remember hearing him as being the big bad. I was like, oh Christ, like, good for William Sadler that he's been bumped up to, like, you know, that we read Salem's Lot, Kurt Barlow doesn't feature that much, but he's an ominous presence throughout the whole thing. So getting that part is like a big deal. Wow. Yeah. So it was good for him to claw his way to the top of the king pile. Yeah, I guess
for sure.
If that movie comes out, though, that's a Warner Brothers property that's been Warner Brothers of late has had a problem with just going, because it was supposed to be out like last year, and they have a thing of just going like, you know what, we're just not releasing that now. So he might be in a Salem's Lot version that we might see.
Well, you can be thankful there's not a superhero movie, then that would have been completely scrapped, you know.
Yeah, but you never know. It could be like they're going over to, where's the Salem's Lot? What Salem's Lot? it's gone. That never happened. What are you talking about?
Don't know. So we ended things yesterday with Sam Coleman noticing that Stuart is there, and she catches up to him with her cameraman. You know, he basically blinding Stuart and Garber, you know, with the huge light that he has on the camera. And she goes, Colonel Stuart, could we have a few words? And he looks at her as he continues walking. He doesn't even break step as he's doing. You can have two. F***ing you.
Yeah.
And then Garber puts his hand over the camera and says, no pictures, you pinko bitch. So I thought that was a little strange. You know, first of all, you know, we see that she's trying to get the scoop. You know, she's the one, she's looking around. She's like, okay, I'm here for Esperanza, but there's got to be something better going on. And, you know, she found this scoop. So it got me thinking, how old do you think the word scoop is?
Oh, I imagine it must be. That strikes me as like a 1930s kind of thing. Like, I can imagine the guys with the fedoras and the little press things they're going to have going, what a scoop! And
So it actually is even older than that. It was you could first find it documented in 1874, and to Whoa. someone using it to be the first to report something was in 1884. Okay, Ooh. It's basically the first discovery or first report of something important. There are a whole bunch of John le Carré novels, spy novels, that scoop is new information of major strategic importance. But, you know, the person doesn't plan on publishing it.
I wonder if it was the first scoop that someone created the term, what a scoop. They're like, what a scoop. We've got this new thing we can say. Tell everybody.
I mean, she feels to me like she's like a paparazzi here. You know, running after him. But, paparazzi, I don't think would be running after someone like Colonel Stuart.
No. No. Oh no,
that's not paparazzi top priority, you know.
I'm like, that's death from Bill and Ted. Go get him. it's weird with the betrayal of the press. I wonder if there was a conscious effort, because Sam's much more likable than William Atherton was in the previous.
Or that William Atherton will be here.
Yeah. So I wonder if there was a little thing like, well, we're really hard, and we seem to be indicating that all journalists were kind of not that William Atherton is supposed to represent all journalists.
No, but William Atherton is an actor who always plays. That's what it comes down to. Most of his big roles, that's what he does. You know, you have him in Ghostbusters, and you have him in both Die Hards, and where else did we have him? There was someone else. I discussed it when I did Die Hard. There's a few others where you're like, okay, I understand why he's doing that.
Yeah.
Real genius. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's such an genius. but his direct actions in Die Hard lead to, like, you know, Holly getting, like, Gruber figuring out, like, wait a minute. You know,
that's right.
The interview with
You know, well, so, what about in this movie? You know.
Yeah, yeah. But I wonder, though, if they were like, we have to have, maybe we should have a journalist in here that's, like, good.
Yeah. You know, that's, well, but she's also very helpful to him in numerous occasions here. You know, yeah, she'll be helpful to John, you know, in the elevator, and she'll be helpful to John at the end when he needs a helicopter. So.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can't.
I was wondering, like, you know, if there's any, like, between the 20th Century Fox and any of the media conglomerates there, were like, well, if you could portray, like, a good journalist in here, because we do own several new companies as well. That might be helpful for us.
But... And have you ever heard the word Pinko before?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was happy to find out, too. It means exactly what I assumed it always meant. Because I think, oh, yeah, a Pinko is someone like, oh, it's, you know, a communist, right? Because it's red. Red is communism, but I guess pink would mean, like, you're not quite a communist, but you're in the same liberal kind of area. Right.
It's someone who's basically being sympathetic or supportive of communism.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's one of those things I would have heard. No one would ever use it over here, but, like, I've heard it many times in American media. Right.
So. No, but it basically means someone who's on the far left. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. So, you know, obviously, you know, Garber and Stewart are not on the far left here. So... You know, I don't get into politics or anything like that, but you know, okay, it's easy to see that they are not.
It could also be an indication too, just of like, well, the supposed to portraying Sam is more likable because, you know, like, well, she's on the left, you know, she's a good journalist. She's out for the out for the people. She's not like a crazed right wing nut job or anything like that. But one thing I will note about because of Colonel Stewart's reply. Actually, I was going to skip to him because he's a colonel who's down to business. He's not got a lot of time because in many ways, like, you see variations of that joke done in other movies. Like, you see, like, in Midnight Run, you know, De Niro at one point says to Charles Grodin, he's just like, I got three words for you. Shut the fuck up. And the joke is, like, that's not three words. Yeah, like it's, it feels like, it's like, oh, they could have done a thing where he's like, you know, I got two words for you. And then he ends up saying more. But I think, or even something like, you know, Men in Black, you have, you know, NYPD means I will knock your punk ass down. And just like, there's a joke on a joke.
Right. There.
But I guess Colonel Stewart, there's just like, no. He's not that he's not witty or anything. It's just more he's got no time and he's not going to think of, like, a real zinger of a joke. This is the best he's going to come out with is two words.
But I got to say, it's a great line.
And it's well delivered, you know. It's delivered by a pro. But so, yeah, I'm just thinking, like, if I was there, I'd be like, well, maybe can we put a joke on this joke or anything? But no, I think it's best just to leave it. Yeah. Leave it as the simple... Yeah, you know, two-word thing that he does.
That's fair. Completely. And he just keeps walking. Just and then the cameraman turns there and goes, ah, old news.
Yeah. It's weird enough, I just saw a news report yesterday, too, where, like, a journalist trying to get information out of a guy
Colonel Stewart.
As he's walking. Like, it was like some... No. But, and yeah, I was having watched this clip, I was waiting for the guy to say something, but no, he just awkwardly kept walking on until the journalist couldn't follow him anymore. And I was just like, oh, I was really hoping for, like, a zinger, but no, tragically.
Right.
But we'll say, though, because I know you obviously have a lot of material on Sheila McCarthy as things go on. My only two notes on her is that she's in a really underrated, I'm a big rom-com guy. I understand you might be as well, Rob, because you've obviously done When Harry Met Sally. But she's in a great movie from like 2 or 3 years ago called The Broken Hearts Gallery. When she pops up in.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it.
It has. I really recommend looking it up. It's got Billy from Stranger Things. And it's a likable character. It's weird because he's such a hateful ass from Stranger Things. And then a great actress who I really love called Geraldine Viswanathan. Who's in that thing with Daniel Radcliffe and Steve Buscemi at the minute? Miracle Workers, and she's in Blockers with John. She was John Cena's daughter in Blockers and stuff. She's great, great actress. Really, really naturally funny lady. And it's basically the whole thing is that she gets broken up with. She takes it really, really badly, and she always keeps little things of her exes. And then she randomly comes across a guy who, of course, they fall in love down the line. But she decides then to, like, put up her mementos on the wall, and she just writes a thing called The Broken Hearts Gallery on top of it. It's in like a loft space that's just open to the public. And then more people come in and they start putting their mementos of their exes and writing how the relationship ended. And it becomes a whole viral thing. Apparently it's based on a true story, like something similar to that.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. And what role does she play in it? She plays like one of the mothers or something?
No, she's the she's just one of the random women who shows up at one point to.
Oh.
Yeah. But and then Bernadette Peters is like the big, the person comes in like, I'm going to break this proper gallery, and if you give this speech, you'll get $1 million. And but yeah, she was about there as well. And it's a great movie. I highly recommend people seek it out. I also know too that she was in that apparently she was in the Free Willy cartoon that no one remembers except for like, oh, that was the thing that happened. We're like, they.
I didn't even remember that there was a Free Willy cartoon.
Weird one.
It went up on me there.
No, if you remember, but it's one of those things that shouldn't have ever been a cartoon because it's just like, how do you make Free Willy into like a weekly cartoon? And it's like you kind of turn it into Captain.
Every week you got to free him again.
Yeah, well, they're bringing like supervillains. So it was like Free Willy. It was this guy.
He keeps getting freed, and then someone captures him again.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I think they kind of went down a more environmental Captain Planet thing with it because there used to be. They had a proper supervillain in it called like The Machine. And it was a guy with like a half metal head and a big robotic arm and stuff. And you're like, what's this got to do with Free Willy? Like, it's just like they're like, oh, it's an IP we bought. And we're just like,
That's really weird.
A boy and his magic whale. And they fight a cyborg guy every week. And it's called Free Willy. Like, okay. And it's like, how many seasons did it last? Oh, it only lasted one season.
I'm surprised it lasted so long. Yeah,
it's like, well, once you with animation, once you green light it, you have to make a certain amount, I guess. I was like, well, we've already got like 90 of these things coming, so then that's season one. But but obviously we're gonna do Sheila a lot more down the line. So I just wanted to shout out those for two particular projects. Because I don't know if they'll get a lot of love later on in the season.
Right. And so then we're back. The shot goes back to John. John is now stuck in the middle of like this big crowd of people trying to get across the sea of tourists, I guess you can say.
Mm.
And he just quickly spots Cochrane, which, I give him a lot of credit for that because, he's able to find a needle in a haystack, very simply.
Yeah. This is always the thing where, where people always said like the high concept thing of like, oh, it's Die Hard on a bus is speed, and that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. then I always had a problem because people said like, "Oh, Die Hard 2 is just Die Hard on a plane." And it's like, no, it's not because he's not on the plane. Like,
that's right.
You could make Die Hard on a plane, but it wouldn't be this movie because he's running around.
It's Die Hard in an airport.
Yeah. But the thing is too, like, if it was a bit like Die Hard in an airport, where these guys kind of like they try to do a proper takeover of the airport, these shots indicate like how impossible that would be because like look how many
For sure.
You could never rein in the crowds like this. It would be like
that's right,
thousands and thousands of people there. So I always want to give Die Hard 2 a little bit more like, oh no, it's not just like, oh, we're repeating the same formula, only it's on a plane this time. Like, no, it's not on a plane. He's running around outside for freaking most of it. So,
that's right.
Yeah,
I don't even think John is on a plane at all in this movie.
No.
He's in the cockpit. He's not on a plane that's in the air.
He's on the wing of a plane at one point.
No, he's on the wing of a plane, yes. Yeah. But he also sits in the cockpit of of the Military One.
Yeah.
FM1, Foreign Military One. Before he ejects from it.
Shame they never didn't have one bit of him sneaking in the door and sitting down just going Die Hard on a plane, and it just gets sucked back out the door again.
Yeah, and so John is trying to get across, to get closer to Cochrane, and we see him watching Cochrane from the distance, and then Cochrane walks over to this door. It seems as if he maybe punches in a code or something like that, or maybe uses a key. Can't really tell what he's doing, and then he goes through the locked door. And, Cochrane, before he goes through, looks around suspiciously before he goes through the door. I love that, in movies. Before someone does something suspicious, they always look around to make sure no one's looking.
Yeah.
just to be sure. Just to be sure.
It is the class, the Simpsons, like the dog with the shifty eyes, basically. Just
exactly.
Stopping. Like,
for sure. Did it. And as John is trying to go through this whole crowd, he goes, oh, damn it. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And after he sees that Cochrane goes into this door, he walks over, tries to get in. The door seems to be locked, mm-hmm. surprisingly. And then he looks around and sees a skycap, and he decides to ask him for help. Right? It's a little strange that the guy is wearing a cap with NEA on it. Mm. The Northeast Airlines. It's like every time that we're gonna mention this a lot throughout the movie. Anytime there's something that goes on in the airport, it's NEA. You know, like, this is a guy who works for NEA. Now, the actor who plays this character, his name is Dwayne Hargrave. He has, how many IMDb credits do you think he has?
Well, it's either going to be like 280 or 3 or something like that.
It's even less than that. He has one.
Whoa.
This is his only credit on IMDb.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
He's still out there.
And it got me a little curious, but I tried searching for him, couldn't find anything about him.
Oh.
But one of the things that I do when I prepare for these episodes is I listen to the commentary from Renny Harlin. And Renny Harlin actually mentions that this is a guy who they found him. He was a homeless guy on the street.
Whoa.
And decided that they're going to try and help him, and they're going to give him this job. And now I understand why this is his only credit.
Oh.
Because, you know, it's not like he went into the, you know, it's not as if he got a SAG card after this.
Yeah.
You know,
Ooh.
But, you know, and John walks over to him and goes, "Hey, man, what is it? You got a key for this door?" "Yeah, why?" "Because I want you to open it."
Mm.
And, you know, he flashes his badge at the same time. Once again, he's flashing an LA badge, which doesn't mean anything in DC, but, you know, it still works, apparently.
I don't know about equipment. As soon as I saw a badge, I'll be like, whatever. But I don't know. It's a real cop movie thing for people to be like, LA, get the hell out of here. That doesn't mean anything around here. Like,
that's right.
Still a cop, man. Come on.
That's right. You're out of your jurisdiction.
Yeah, yeah. It's just around this time, like, I just really noticed that, like, so much of the music, though, is the same score as the first movie. It's a big thing we had to do with...
It's Michael Kamen who does both of them.
Yeah, yeah. But it's almost so much to the point, like, you're sitting there going, like, he's just like, "Oh, just use this." Like, I don't know if he was, like, overworked at the time, or if he's just like, "Well, why put a hat in a hat? Like, just, do you want a Die Hard score?"
But think about it. I mean, if you think about like John Williams' work on Indiana Jones or Star Wars, they're all very similar. You know, he keeps the same type of theme in a franchise. It's not like you would expect them to have something completely different here.
I would say there's distinct tracks and stuff between the Star Wars movies. I'll be like, I could tell you which soundtrack is from which movie just by.
Oh, for sure. So can I.
It's the thing though that happens, because we had to deal with it actually kind of directly in Batman. We had the first two seasons, Danny Elfman doing music.
Danny Elfman,
and
right.
It's like Batman Returns is a similar flavor to 89, but he's written a completely different score. Of different leitmotifs for different characters. He's got a whole Penguin suite. He's got a whole Catwoman suite. And the Batman theme is rejigged and stuff. And then we came across with Batman Forever. It's like, oh, Elliot Goldenthal, entirely new score. Batman and Robin, Elliot Goldenthal. It's like he just went like, "I already wrote you a Batman score. Like, why do you want me to do you another one?" I was like, "I'll add in a Mr.
Well, theme. Come on. But it also shows the difference between the way that Schumacher worked and the way that Tim Burton works.
Yeah.
Maybe that has part to do with it. I don't know.
I think it might have been overworked too. Because I think like between Forever, Batman Forever is 95, A Time to Kill is 96, and 97 is Batman and Robin. So that's three movies on the trot, all of which Elliot Goldenthal is doing the music for. He could have been like, when he's like, "Oh, you're going to write that Batman and Robin music, right?" He's like, I'm in the middle of doing A Time to Kill, man. What the hell you want from me?" So, just use, like, here's one.
Just reuse what I just did.
Yeah, here's one new thing for Mr. Freeze. Like, one little 2-second bit. There you go. that's your new score. Which, I don't know. Like,
okay, that's fair.
Like, Michael Kamen, like, maybe, I think Die Hard is the most I know of him. I don't know, maybe he was doing, like, a lot of TV work or something at the time. But it's, it's so much of it's just very much like, no, we're just, you know, just use the same bits, you know, it works. I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But it was around this time I started really noticing, like, it's the exact same. Like, I wonder if he even.
It's very similar. It's definitely very similar. No question about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but again, I don't fault them for that. I look at it that, okay, they're trying to keep the same type of flow with the music.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. But, you know, everyone can look at it differently.
I know, that does happen. Right, well, like, I mean, I think there's a period in, think it's about season 5 of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They completely change like the kind of music that goes on within the show. Like they start really, it becomes a lot hammier and stuff. It gets really amped up a lot more. And I remember the time.
Do you think it's because they changed the person in charge of the music?
It could have been. I just it's a thing I remember from when I was a kid and just been like really like, whoa, something's happened here. It could be like maybe they got in someone new to do like the week to week scoring. So yeah, when you do shake things up, sometimes it can be a bit like, whoa, this isn't the same thing at all. What the hell are you doing?
So, right. Well, as you know, Die Hard 3 is very different. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Even though it's back with McTiernan, but
that's what happened.
I don't think it's Kamen who does it.
Yeah. It's just very like, cause yeah, but Die Hard with Avengers, but in terms of the high concept thing, it's like, it's Die Hard in a city. So he's running around everywhere because the second one he was on the plane, which, right? It's like, he wasn't on a plane in the second one. He was running around everywhere in the second one as well. Like,
No. What's funny is that usually people try to get smaller and smaller venues, and in this movie it's the exact opposite. They go for the larger venues each time, because in Die Hard 4 it's the entire East Coast, and Die Hard 5 it's Russia. So.
Yeah. And they made Die Hard 6. He's going to the moon. You know, he's spreading further and further out. It becomes like the
clean virus. First of all, I
spreads everywhere.
I made a mistake. I did make a mistake. It is Michael Kamen also in the third one.
Oh, okay.
Michael Kamen does it, but you know, I guess as you said, he had a little more time on his hands and decided to go with a completely different theme.
He probably isn't sick of hearing people like me going like, "Yes, you're the same score." The second one, like, "All right, asshole, yeah. I'll go over
right here and And Die Hard 4 is Marco Beltrami, but that also probably had to do with the fact that Kamen was no longer alive. Mm. So I don't think he was able to do the score.
Yeah, I think Marco, he's the guy who did Scream. I believe that was his big thing, like Marco Beltrami.
Right. He actually did 5 also. He did both 4 and 5. Even though, you know, as we mentioned yesterday, 5 I don't really count as part of the...
I think if you were to rewatch 5 too, you find that Marco Beltrami just went, like, he just got a score from Die Hard 4, just etched out 4.
Right. He also did World War Z, iRobot, Knowing, Hellboy. Mm.
Which Hellboy, though? That's the thing.
The recent movie Plane. Yeah. The recent movie Plane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, there you go. He's getting closer to Die Hard 2, I guess. But...
Yeah.
Plane also ironically not set all that much on a plane. The plane only features like fleetingly throughout the film.
That's correct. Yeah. Oh well, that's what they want. They want to grab you in for that, and then trick you once you're already there.
Yeah, there's a thing. There's a lot of subterfuge going on with that, because there's a bit like you see in all the promotional stuff. Jared Butler going on with this gash in his head, looks like he's been in a fight, and then you watch the movie and it's like, no, they go through turbulence and he like an idiot gets up and starts walking around the plane when they're in turbulence. It's like, you're the captain, man, freaking sit and steer the damn plane, what are you doing?
That's what the pilot is supposed to do.
Just walk down the aisle going, are you okay? Oh, I hit my head because the plane's going up and down, probably because I'm not freaking steering it. But
yeah, it's true. All right, I have nothing else to say about this minute. Do you have anything else to say about the minute?
No, that's all for this minute.
Okay, so the script is really, really short. It's actually it's less than half a page this entire minute. And the only difference is after Stuart says you can have two f***ing you, it says the interview is over and he's out the door. Mm. And then it says that McClane is searching for his quarry, Cochran, and gets a glimpse of him at the door marked no admittance, and then he disappears. McClane runs up, too late, the door is shut again. He looks around, sees a luggage worker, flashes his and says, "Open this," as the guy obeys. You know, there's no debate. In the script, it's "open it." And yeah. There you go.
My only additional note would be I do love Bruce's delivery of like. It's like a guy has to do this a million times. Is like, you know, oh, can you, you know, open this door for me? Like, oh, like why? And then have to pull out like, because I want you to open. Like, yeah. You know, have to go through like, I'm not gonna be a dick about this, but like I have to explain. And yeah, I'm a cop, and you know, it's just do it. You know, like that kind of thing. But Bruce. It's almost as if that Bruce Willis guy is a good actor. But,
yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
All right. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Disaster Tuesday. Which one of the things that I decided that I'm going to do this season is because in this movie there is a plane crash. So every Tuesday I'm going to, you know, talk a little bit about some famous person or persons that unfortunately perished in some sort of plane accident. So I try to find something close to the geographical location of my guest, but I couldn't really find anything really famous from the area of where you live or Ireland or the places that you told me you're from. So the closest I was able to find is, did you know that the actor Leslie Howard died in a plane crash?
I did not.
Do you know who Leslie Howard was?
Oh yeah, I've seen Leslie Howard. Yeah, like a big old
Yes.
style movie star. Yeah.
That's right. So he died in 1943, the 1st of June 1943, and apparently his plane was shot down by the Germans. As he was traveling to Portugal to promote the British cause, and he was flying all around there. And then when he was flying back from Lisbon, his plane was shot down by a Luftwaffe plane while he was over the Atlantic. There were
Those guys really hated the British cause. Like, they're
apparently
communists. Take them
completely.
down.
There were 17 people on the plane that were killed. Now, there have been so many conspiracy theories in the 80 years since this happened that many people believe that Leslie Howard was actually working as a spy. And that's possibly why the plane was shot down. No one has ever given proof of that. It's something that's one of those legends that you couldn't really find out. We'll never really find out if it's true or not. One of the things that I found out, which I found really, really interesting about it, was that someone's doing a documentary about it. Okay, there's a documentary that's still being made called The Mystery of Flight 777 by a filmmaker named Thomas Hamilton. And he goes through all the different theories and myths that have grown about the shooting down of this plane, because they're also talking about other passengers who were on there. But the idea is they're trying to, talk about the fact of whether he was a spy or not. So yeah, I found that to be a little interesting. Obviously,
Well,
this segment is a little on the downer. So,
yeah.
sorry to everybody, but still, I just found it to be
Oh, they died in their
interesting.
40s. It's fine.
Well, some of the ones we talked about, the one we talked about last week just happened 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So, we talked about Kobe Bryant last week, but some of them are it's unfortunate, but it's also to mention these people and what happened to them.
Well, may I suggest that you move segments and you move the McLean Mondays to Wednesday, call it Willis Wednesdays, and then call it Monday Morning, with a U, and then you put that at
That's
the end
great.
on
That's
that
great.
Monday.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to change it, but I like the idea. Thank you.
Well, actually, one
I'll
thing
keep that in
that
mind.
when you were saying about the Leslie Howard, just remembered, because we, weirdly enough, in recording on Batman, we talked about Leslie Howard not too long ago.
Ah, you
Uh,
see?
because yeah, he actually Kevin Conroy, the tragically late Kevin Conroy, who only died there a couple of months ago now, as of recording. He one of his people said when he did the voice of Batman back in the 90s, obviously originally in 92, and people are saying, oh, are you basing it off Michael Keaton and stuff like that? That's where you come from. And he always said, no, my kind of take on it is Hamlet and also specifically Leslie Howard in the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Oh,
He
wow.
always,
Very cool.
and it was the whole business of like Bruce Wayne's voice is very light and airy and kind of up here, and he's a kind of gad about and stuff like that. And then his Batman's very down there, but he still talk. He doesn't. He's not doing a proper. He's doing a kind of just a lower version. And apparently, all that is that's directly inspired by Leslie Howard's Scarlet Pimpernel. So
Ooh,
there you go,
very
Leslie
cool. There
Howard.
you go. There
It's
is a
all
connection to
everything.
Nile, and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah, I keep telling you, man, everything is connected.
That
So.
is true. That is true. All right. So you want to once again tell people how they can find you?
Well, yeah. Again, if you want to hear from me, you and hear me tell you more random tidbits about Batman, you can get me at Bat Minute, which is available on all good social medias. On Facebook, we have the Bat Minute Listeners Cave, wherein we'd just come in and talk about. Doesn't have to be about Batman, just Batman adjacent stuff. You can go in and talk about. You want to talk about Michael Keaton's latest thing? What Tim Burton's up to? What Joel Schumacher was up to? What if you found a random tidbit? It's all fair game over there. And then we're on Twitter and we're on Instagram at the Bat Minute. And yeah, the show is available on all good podcasters. You've got four whole seasons you can catch up on, and also just like a plethora of random hiatus episodes. Like, we've done reviews of Jingle All the Way. We've done all the Prince movies. Of course, Prince did the soundtrack for 89. So we've looked at his three theatrical releases. We've done Mars Attacks. We've done The Number 23. We did Joel Schumacher's The Phantom of the Opera most recently there, which was a great episode. Really, like, really, really enjoyed editing that and stuff when we're listening back to it. So you can hear me talk about Batman and much more over there. So, yeah, when, if, yeah.
Great. Thank you. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little